Welcome to Gardening Naturally with Jeff Ferris. Call or text Jeff now with your gardening and landscape questions, 512-836-0590.
Hey, good morning, gardeners. Nice day out today. I'm not a fan of it being warm, but it looks like it's going to be a nice day. Partly cloudy, best time to be out in the garden. Nice temperature, not blazing sun. The weather's warm enough. I say this carefully, because I know this week a lot of you got pounded. And I mean that literally, with some really amazing hail. And I'm sorry if you were in that path. I really am. It is so damaging and you really can't do anything about it. You watch it destroy things. But we do need the rain that came. Wish there was more of it, because we're slightly ahead for the year, but I don't think we're going to remain ahead for the year. So every drop we can get is worthwhile. I only managed an inch and what did we get, an inch and 3/4? Over the week, not complaining. Lots of stuff are looking green. Let's go to the phone. This is Dawn. Dawn, what can I help you with?
Hi, Jeff. I was listening to you about a month ago, and my interest was piqued when you were talking about, to somebody about trichogramma eggs and their pecan trees.
Yes.
And I thought, well, would that work with my mountain laurels? So I bought some trichogramma eggs that were on cards.
Yes.
And hung them on the, I have 5 mountain laurels, so I hung a card on each tree. And this was about a month ago, and I'm in Harker Heights, about an hour north of Austin. And the weather was a little bit cold at the time, like below 60 degree nights. And I thought, well, I don't know if they're going to hatch and come out. But when I got them, they were kind of like hatched in the package, some of them. And I was surprised because they're like really tiny, like gnats. I didn't know that. I thought, they would be like big, like wasps. But I put those up there, and I know you were saying that you were already getting webworms at that time. And so a week later, I came out and saw, I had some webworms on some of my mountain laurels, and sprayed with the BT. And so for the past month now, I noticed there's no webworms, but I'm not really sure, you know, what's working and what's not.
Okay, Dawn, here's the thing. I can't tell you if trichogramma wasps, which are fantastic beneficial insects, yeah, they're really tiny, aren't they? They're you'd never see one if you weren't looking for it. But
yeah,
they do attack other insects. Aphids are a good one. The webworms in pecans, stuff like that. But I've never read anything about using them for the genista moth, which is what attacks the mountain laurel. Now, that doesn't mean they don't work, but I would think if they were effective, especially especially for us folks here in Texas, we'd be using them more often so we didn't get our mountain laurels attacked by that webworm.
Right. Okay.
I'm going to have to look that up. I'm not saying it doesn't work. That's a really unique one to me. I've never had anybody ask that. So,
okay.
But I did use BT also.
Yes.
Because I was just starting to get them. And I only had to spray once so far. I'm amazed.
Okay.
Normally you got to spray a lot. But I've only had to spray once. And I don't see them on there anymore. I think I'm going to spray again just as a preventative. But you may have gotten yours early enough that, hey, you wiped them out in one try. But you asked a really good question, and I'm going to do some research on that to see if that is a solution, because, man, those little things just hang a tag in the tree and you're done. They'll take
right.
care of the problems for you.
That's what I was thinking, because sometimes
yeah.
I really go to battle with the webworms, it seems like, till like June sometimes.
Well,
some years are worse than others.
Absolutely. We had a year where you could spray every day and we couldn't keep up with them. They
wow.
were just always there. And it was about a year, maybe 18 months of just vicious attacks of these guys. And now they're finally in a cycle where they're not so prevalent. Now that's
yeah.
kind of how nature works. We have really bad runs of a bug and then we don't see it again, at least for a while.
Yeah. You know what else I thought was interesting when I hung the cards up? About three days later, when I went to check on the cards, I saw those red and black laurel. I think you call them the laurel bugs.
Scarlet laurel bug, yeah.
Right, right. And I think they might have been on the cards, possibly eating the wasp eggs.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, there's another
there were,
one.
There
I know the
like
scarlet.
Three of them on the card, so.
Well,
yeah.
I know scarlet laurel bugs are plant eaters.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, they're like vampires. They suck juices out of the plant. But I don't know that they're omnivores and actually eat insects. So
okay.
Now you hit me with two here today that I'm going to have to check out for you.
and then I was thinking, I'm sorry, I was thinking, I know you probably got other calls. I was thinking about the BT and if it affects the Trichogramma wasps.
It should not.
Okay.
Because Trichogrammas are not in the family that are affected by the BT bacteria.
Okay.
So they
should
not
be
affected. I believe so, yes.
Okay, that's good.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'll keep an eye on it and experiment and see what happens.
Yeah, I really want to look those two things up. I would rather have better information than simply tell you, oh, no, that's not going to work. So
right.
I need to get
yeah.
the better information part first.
It just got me thinking, and I was like, wow, that would be great if I could just hang a card up. But, I mean, I haven't been in Texas as long as other people with mountain laurels. So
That's true.
Yeah.
I will get some information on that. Make sure everybody can hear it.
All right, cool. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for the call, Dawn. Folks, I got to take a quick break. Bobby, I see you there. I'll catch you on the other side.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, gardener. Beautiful day today. got a terrible echo here, but hope you're not hearing it. Let's go to the phone. This is Bobby. Bobby, what can I do for you?
Jeff, good morning. So I've been growing tomatoes for over 20-some years, and this year, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the cool nights we've had, but I've got plenty of flowers, but I cannot get them to fruit. I mean, I've tried to self-pollinate them, shake them. We've got a ton of wind. You think it's because of the cool nights that I'm not getting fruit?
Can't answer that because I got plenty of people who are going to call in here in a second and say, I got fruit everywhere. On my personal tomato patch, I planted six tomatoes, a Sun Gold, three Juliet, and a couple of celebrities. All of them are actually forming tomatoes. The only problem I would tell you is I'm not sure if the number of tomatoes per bract is a good number or low, you know, like it's only pollinating one of the flowers and there may be six or seven flowers. And the celebrities have not even opened any flowers yet. Could it be the cold?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, it could be. It does affect the tomatoes and their productivity. It's warming up, and that would be the first clue. As the weather starts to warm up, are you seeing better pollination?
Well, that's just time will tell that, but I've never seen it like this year. It's just, and I grow all heirlooms. Excuse me, and I just, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm thinking it's the cool nights, because it took a while from to bud. I mean, I've laid off the nitrogen. The plants are healthy as can be, and I'm all phosphorus, and in fact, I squirt them with Epsom salt, and I mean, I do everything the same. It just, it's almost like the flowers are like when you get to July and August, where they just, you know, they bloom and they drop off. Now, they're hanging in longer, they're not dropping immediately, but they just won't, and they're self-pollinate. I mean, they'll pollinate themselves because they're male, female, but, and we've had plenty of wind, which that helps. And,
yeah, it does. You know, it really does. Part of the problem, I get seasonal tomatoes, and that, I don't mean, well, I get them in, you know, spring. I don't get them in the fall. I have seasonal as in years. I've had years where I get buckets of tomatoes. And the next year in the same environment doing the same things, it's, I get half a bucket. And I should have gotten so many more. I've had years where I basically didn't get any tomatoes. Now, part of that was I had created a new garden bed. And the soil was, I didn't prepare it well enough before I put the tomatoes in. This year, I've got some really good soil. I worked real hard to develop it, and it's doing well. So I think it's because they're tomatoes. They are bred specifically to irritate us. And this is what we suffer some years.
So I got one for you. I've got a, I grow six plants, and for 20-some years, overcome that, no disease. I worked the soil. I put, you know, all kinds of compost manures in them in off season. But I know I've been told I can't move it because I don't have a big garden area. But other than this year, it's been it's pretty amazing that I haven't moved plot. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and you know, you're doing everything that really helps defeat any diseases or pests that will be there. The happier the growing environment, the better they'll grow. And that means resisting those kind of bad things. But part of the problem you may have, and you won't find out till you pull up a tomato, is if you're having really bad nematodes. They sap the strength out of a tomato so that they won't produce. I mean, you get very few, if any, tomatoes with a really bad nematode infection. That goes for okra, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers. Nematodes can really decrease the crop. Actually, zero out the crop, basically. So you won't know till you actually pull up a tomato to look at its roots. And if you got nematodes, well, there are things you can do to get rid of them and defeat them. So ride it out yet. I have a feeling the weather hasn't helped you out much.
No, that's what I'm thinking. So anyway, all right, well, I appreciate it. I hope you have a good afternoon.
You too. Thanks for the call. Let's go to the phone. This is James. James, what can I help you with?
Morning, Jeff. I talked last time about the trichogrammas we're putting out every 2 weeks to get a head start on the tomato fruit worms.
Yes.
We put out two bunches, and now it's time to put out the lace wings. And I want to tell you guys that the lace wings come on cards just like the trichogrammas. Eggplant cards, so they're real easy to incubate and then put out on the plants. But it's getting time for lace wings.
I'm a big fan of them. They are super aggressive, and they can eat a insect twice their size. So yeah, the lace wing juveniles. Now, the lacewing adult is kind of worthless. I mean, they're not big eaters. But their teenage kids are awesome sauce when it comes to eating bugs.
It's recommended one or two tabs per tomato plant, depending on how many tomato plants you got and how bad they are. But two tabs, one tab is about right for each tomato plant, and there's 30 tabs on a card, so that lets you know how many to order.
30 per card. Wow.
Yeah, well, and then you need at least one or two per plant, so that'll get you going in the right direction once they hatch out and start searching, then you've got a pretty good workforce to help keep your plants fairly clean.
I wouldn't need anywhere near as many just for tomatoes, but I do have some oak trees that do get the webworms in them, so that would help my oak trees behave, you know, it'll help protect them. So if you're getting some and it's more than you need, you should just, you can put them to use in other locations.
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about tomatoes, and I've been growing tomatoes for a little over 50 years. And back in the day, we used steer manure. That was way before aerated compost tea. But a lot of my tomato beds are 30 years old, and compost and compost tea eliminates the need to rotate crops, and that's in Elaine Ingham's book.
On the soil food web?
Yeah, that's in her fifth edition in black and white. Compost tea eliminates all your problems, so you really don't need to do any crop rotations. Just more compost,
James,
more compost tea.
James, thank you for the call. I'm up against a news break. Folks, I'll catch you on the other side.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm getting some messages texted to me, and I guess they definitely are ones I should answer. One of the questions is, where do you get these beneficial insects? That is a great question. Should be talking about it. There is a company called Arbico, A-R-B-I-C-O, Arbico. You can find them on the web. And they have a very complete catalog, all kinds of beneficial insects. They now also carry beneficial fungi and bacteria, ones that you can spray that will prevent other fungi and other bacteria from attacking your plants. Now, let's be honest here. Some of the beneficial bacterias, the beneficial fungi, ain't cheap. Sometimes they can be well over $100 an acre. But depending on what you have been suffering, and if you know other gardeners, well, gee, share. But you can find beneficial insect vendors on the web. Use your search engine, type in beneficial insects, and there are a lot of companies that raise and sell you these goodies to help take care of problems you have. So just one example is the Arbico company. They've got a very large catalog. Again, A-R-B-I-C-O. So give them a look. They have insects for specific issues, like the webworms. They've got the wasps. Maybe you've got a mite issue. They have what's called a minute pirate bug. It's kind of weird. I don't know why they call it that, but he's got a long spike for a nose. And he runs around and stabs and collects the bad bugs on his, for lack of a better word, beak. They have the weirdest beneficial insects, but they can really correct problems in the garden without having to use nasty, harsh chemicals. Let's go to the phone. This is Tom. Tom, what can I help you with?
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call, Jeff. I'm trying to compost with some compost on my lawn and also fertilize it. While I'm waiting for someone, you know, to find someone to put some compost, can I go ahead first and put the fertilizer, or I have to wait and put the fertilizer after the composting?
No, you don't have to wait to fertilize. So if you've got some and you've got time, you can do that before you put the compost on the turf.
Okay, I have that's Medina fertilizer. So I put the fertilizer, and whenever these guys are available to put the compost, they can put it on the top.
Correct.
Okay. Can I have one more question, please?
Yes.
I have knockout roses, and every year I have problem that their leaves are completely destroyed at this time by some kind of bugs. They eat them up, sometimes all the way up to the stem. So what I do, I have a neem, that you use to spray them, and it's not that effective. Other than neem oil, What else do you recommend?
It depends on the bug. There is a bug called a rose chafer. It looks like a June bug. And they are notorious for eating rose buds, for eating parts of the plant. You can try diatomaceous earth, called DE, and dust the plant with it, and that will slow down, if not stop, the rose chafers. You may want to look and see if you have an ant issue. Some of the ants in our environment will bite off a leaf. They're called leaf cutter ants. Mm-hmm. And they will wander off with the leaf. They take it back to their nest. And when they take it down in the nest, they grow a fungus on it. Leaf cutter ants are farmers. So they raise this fungus, which is their food. And roses are one of their victims. Crepe myrtles are also one of their victims. They like both. But you will see them carrying off a leaf. If you're not seeing a trail of ants and little pieces of leaf wandering down the street, it's probably not leaf cutter ants. But a rose chafer stands out. If you're out there, he's kind of big. He's up to maybe half an inch. So you should see this bug. He'll look like a June bug. If you see
I don't see the ants, but the leaves are eaten so fast, it's nothing left from the leaves, actually. So I need something to spray it, and I have been using neem oil, the original one, diluted according to the instructions, and sprayed it, but it doesn't stop it.
Okay. You need to find the bug. You need to figure out what is the insect that is eating the plant. Neem oils should slow down if it's rose chafers, but if you're using it and it's not stopping them. So you really need to narrow down what insect is doing this. You may have to go out at night and take a good look at the rose to find what has been eating it so that you can get the right control for it. If it is the rose chafers, diatomaceous earth does help. It'll help keep the insects off of your plant, and it will wind up cutting them and desiccating them, which will kill them. But it's not an immediate kill.
Okay. What was the name of that?
Diatomaceous earth. It's called DE, and it's not the swimming pool variety. The swimming pool diatomaceous earth is for filtering water. It will not work for killing the insects.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you so much. My main concern is just, fertilizing while I'm waiting for someone to come up with the compost. Because they were telling me, don't put the fertilizer. Wait until we compost it.
You don't have to. It won't make a difference to the turf.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Folks, I see you, Roger and Sam. I got to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. A great question, okay? First off, a comment. The gentleman who was looking at all these leaves disappearing from his roses just chewed off. I didn't ask, but I would have assumed he would have noticed if he has deer, because deer will eat roses. They'll eat anything. Rabbits, not so much, but not impossible. I have had more than one plant that I've had to cover or fence off to keep rabbits from eating it. So it's possible it's not even an insect. It could be a rodent. It could be deer. So you have to take that into account. Second, it's the common question of, what if you can't find the bug? How do you know how to treat it? You should be able to find the bug. If you can't find a bug, go out at night. Not all, you know, there are party bugs out there. They're out at night doing their business. Go out, you know, an hour or so after sunset with a flashlight. Take a good look at them. They are not invisible. Turn the leaf over. Many insects love to hide under the leaf so that you can't see them. Let's go to the phone. This is Roger. Roger, what can I help you with?
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call. You're talking about compost tea. Exactly. How do you make it, and what do you need to make the tea itself?
Sure. I'll give you the 25-second tour. 25-cent tour, sorry. You take a 5-gallon bucket. Well, you take any size container you need, but generally you take a 5-gallon bucket. The quick way is to take and fill that bucket about 1/3 full of a good quality compost. Out of the bag, homemade, doesn't matter. You fill it the rest of the way with water. You pour in a tablespoon or two of molasses. And then you get a fish aquarium air pump. A good strong one, not these little 5-gallon tanks, something that would bubble a 20 to 55-gallon tank. You put an air stone on it, and you drop the air stone into the water. Turn on the air stone, and you're going to have it bubble, and you're going to see there's going to be, it'll look like pond scum form on the top. That is the biological reaction of the beneficial fungi, the beneficial bacteria, etc., in the compost reproducing. You're getting lots and lots and lots of them. You run it for 24 hours, maybe 36 hours. Turn off the air pump. Take out the air pump, and you want to screen the liquid through an old t-shirt, window screen, something, into another 5-gallon bucket. That is the compost tea. That is aerobic compost tea. You literally made sourdough starter. That's effectively what you've done. That material is full of biology, biology you want on your plants, in the soil, things like that. Now, once you've strained it and put it in another bucket, so it's just the liquid, you can take everything that was in that bucket and throw it back in your compost pile. The problem you have is because you turned off the oxygen, it's only going to stay good, meaning everything in there alive, for about 12 hours. So you need to kind of plan this. So when you make up a big batch, you're going to have something that looks like muddy water. It'll look more like coffee than tea. Dilute it with water till it looks like, you know, Texas tea. You can spray it on your plants, or you can drench the soil with it. That is what compost tea is. And it's basically you're inoculating with beneficial fungus, beneficial bacteria on the plants and in the soil to help battle the bad guys.
And you can use this on virtually any plant, vegetables, flowering plants?
Yes, sir, you can. One word of caution. I'm going to say the word caution. If you're using it on edibles, make sure you do a good job of rinsing off the plant, the fruit, or the leaves that you're going to eat. Make sure you rinse that off well, and that's ready to go. You can eat it then.
Okay, looks like I got to get some 5-gallon buckets, a little more than what I have now.
On
the leaves or whatever, does it matter what kind of tree or anything they come from? Or can you use leaf lawn clippings or?
Yeah, anything that you did that you made compost from.
Okay.
Because compost is going to be full of all kinds of good guys. And when you make your own compost, it's full of good guys that are already on your property.
Well, I got a small chipper shredder, so I'll grind up my stuff anyway.
Yeah, there you go. And a good hot complete compost into the bucket. Start with that. You're going to have a great batch of tea.
All right, sir. Definitely appreciate it. You have a good day. See you tomorrow.
You too. Thank you, Roger. Yeah, folks, I'm talking about making aerobic compost tea. That means we're going to feed the soil biologies, whether they come from the leaves or the soil or whatever, we're going to feed them with carbohydrates. That's the molasses, and you can use any kind of molasses. And water, which you filled the bucket with, and you're bubbling oxygen in there, which they need to grow and reproduce. So it is very much like a sourdough starter. You're giving them food, shelter, water, oxygen to grow. You can really produce a nice batch of compost tea with very little effort. Got to remind everybody, the minute you turn the oxygen off, you need to get with it and use it. It will take no time at all. Without oxygen, that biology starts to die, and it will stink. If you smell your compost tea and you have to hold your lunch down because it smells so bad, don't use it. Don't use it. Throw it out. Go dump it in a corner of your lawn or something. But you turn that oxygen off, you need to get with it. You got about 12 hours to get it where you want it to go. But it can be very effective at building up soil biology. If you have listened to James when he calls in, Elaine Ingram is the person who's done the most research on this. She has some great books out that tell you what's going on, how effective it is, and ways to make better compost tea. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. We're coming up to the top of the hour. Got a break for the news. I'll catch you all on the other side.